This is the AV15, a production of the Atlantic Voice podcast. If you've got quarter of an hour for us, then we've got 15 minutes for you. Grab your Fendi skinny double whip mocha latte, your cup of tea with milk and two sugars, or something with bubbles in it if that's your fancy, and spend the next 15 minutes with us here at the Atlantic Voice. This is the AV15. On the line with me is Liz from North Carolina. She is the founder of Bushel and a Peck Dog Rescue. Talk to me about what it is you have set up there.
Okay. So what we've done is we've started a rescue. We're based out of Raleigh, North Carolina. And what we're doing is trying to focus on the abused, abandoned, and misunderstood dogs in North Carolina, along with trying to help our veterans with PTSD, depression, loneliness, and people that are having some issues acclimating back into civilian lifestyle. So with that, we want to help the dogs that, you know, have been dumped at the trailer parks or chained to a tree or, you know, have just been found wandering on the side of the road. North Carolina has a huge issue with too many dogs, and unfortunately, our shelters here, almost all of them are high-kill shelters. So most dogs don't make it past 72 hours, especially if they're a bully breed, pit bull, Rottweiler, anything like that. And there's a ton of great rescues that works with all the shelters and taking dogs off death row. However, for the dogs that are chained to a tree or are found somewhere else or have been, you know, abandoned or abused, going to a shelter really isn't an option, and all these rescues are full because they're helping all the shelter dogs, but there's nowhere for them to go. So that's why we created our rescue, you know, to help with these dogs that need a second chance and need some love and nurturing or are looking for their forever home. And by doing that, we are able to help veterans that are lonely or having issues. We try to get in contact with, you know, the veterans of foreign wars. We're working with some VA affiliates, with some veterans we know personally, about having them either, you know, come spend time with the dogs, adopting the dogs. Eventually, we would like to have a facility where people are able to come and spend time with them, feed them, do anything like that. So we're taking baby steps to walk in that direction to become a really good way to bring both, you know, the healing of the animal and also the healing of, you know, a really important service member.
I'm going to ask you in a moment about everything that you're going through in order to, you know, structure and set up, what you're doing here. But I do want to ask a question about how you got to this point. Was it always your intent to be marrying the two different issues that you know, you talked a little bit there about how, you know, many rescue shelters are full and all this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then you also talked about helping, you know, the veterans and the wounded warriors. Was it mm-hmm. always your intent to bring the two things together, or did that sort of happen organically? I mean, just give the listener a sense of how you married two things that normally exist separately on their own.
Right. So there's two parts. In some ways, we knew this is something we wanted to do, but at the same time, we didn't really, I think, know all the details. So, you know, it was always a goal of mine to start a rescue in North Carolina a few years down the line. I really had never been exposed to North Carolina rescue, so I didn't realize the issue with high kill shelters versus, you know, the abandoned dogs. So when I had said I wanted to start a dog rescue, I don't think at the time knew what type of dogs I would be taking. Our first rescue, besides my own personal rescue dog, she was chained to a tree for a year and a half. And we found out about her, we went and got her, and then I contacted about 50, 60, 70 rescues trying to find someone that would take her in. And unfortunately, everyone was full because they're pulling the dogs from death row. So that's what planted in my mind that, you know, what happens to all those dogs that are left abandoned? Like, where can they go? There's so many people that want to help, but there's way too many dogs for the amount of people that are helping. This is really a group that needs to be focused on, not just, and not saying that the dogs and shelters don't need to be focused on by any means, but this is really hard for dogs to get help with. You know, there's not really as many rescues that focus primarily on this. So that part, we didn't really realize that was the type of dog we were going to be taking, so we don't pull from shelters at all. We'll help with transport. You know, a bunch of us all work together, but we personally don't pull from shelters. We just take more of the phone calls about trailer park dogs or dogs on the side of the road. And then, you know, I've been involved with military for a few years now. I have some really great friends that were in the Marine Corps and in other branches. One of my best girlfriends went to Naval Academy. You know, there's so many people I knew that didn't really realize what you know, deployments kind of did to our veterans, and not always in a negative way, and not everything's not negative, but it is a huge transition for people either getting out of the military or coming back from the deployment and kind of acclimating back. And I, you know, some people have some issues sleeping, some people just don't want to be by themselves, some, you know, there's just so many different things. Again, I am by no means a medical personnel to know, you know, major details about, you know, what each case is, but from personal experience, my, you know, my boyfriend is a Marine Corps veteran, and just from friends of ours, we noticed that, you know, this is a group that there's so many people that want to help them, and North Carolina is such a military-friendly state with Fort Bragg and Camp Lejeune and a bunch of other bases around, that why not help two people that are two groups that can really benefit from this relationship, you know, both the dogs and the veterans. And you know, that's just our way of trying to give back to, you know, our veterans that went and fought for us and, you know, are able to give us our freedom, and also to help a group that doesn't have a voice to speak for themselves.
I'm going to ask you in a moment about that sort of the actual relationship between the animal and the veteran. But before we get to that, I can't imagine sort of the steps that you have to go through to sort of set. I mean, there are plenty of people out there that like animals. I mean, you know, I like animals and you want to do the right thing. But obviously, you know, getting a program like this started has got to be, you know, organizationally complex. There's got to be legality, all kinds of different things, you know. But talk the listener through how you sort of get going with something that ultimately, at the end of the day, you just want to help people. You're not looking to make money. You're not looking to do this, that, or the other. Share with our listeners a little bit sort of the steps that you have to go through to get all set up and running.
So there are a lot of them, and we are extremely new. So we are still trying to figure out the steps while we continue our rescue. So filing for a nonprofit takes about 6 to 8 months to get the paperwork to go through. You know, you have to work sometimes with either a lawyer or an accountant trying to get, you know, all your ducks in a row. So we've been trying to work with someone as far as getting our nonprofit status made, just so it'll help us with, you know, filing for tax write-offs as far as our, not exactly type of tax write-offs, but filing for help with our vet bills, and, you know, just having it so we're able to become a certified nonprofit. The other part of it is there's all the paperwork and everything you have to do with it. But the other issue is also, you know, how do you run the rescue? How do you deal with all of these dogs? And from working with other rescues and just kind of our own formula, what we do is when we're contacted about a dog, we find out where the dog is, first of all. But it's three of our six dogs that come from a trailer park. So we go out to, you know, see the dogs, see kind of how they are, what their temperaments are. We normally call our rescue vet on the way to pick up the dogs to say, hey, we just got a call about a dog. If you have anything free today, we're going to bring the dog by just to make sure, you know, they're healthy, to get their rabies shot, their distemperament, and just get them lined up to, you know, be healthy and be able to be around any other dogs. From then, we always ask for fosters. We're always looking for foster help. We bring the dogs back to us where we do a temperament test. So we just kind of see if they're dog friendly, you know, how they do around people, what kind of things either annoy them or don't, or, you know, what things are best for them. You know, one of our dogs cannot be in a crate. He hates it. He has one of them like 15 times, and he doesn't need to be crated, so we don't crate him anymore. Whereas the other one will just curl up and pass out. So we just little things to help our fosters out so they know. And then once we've found our fosters, they have to fill out a foster form, and we do a home visit. They then get to take our dogs and love them and nurture them and care for them until they found their forever homes. And we donate the crates and the collars we are in charge of all the vet visits, so anytime any of our dogs are due for vet visits, either we will bring them to the vet or sometimes our fosters, who are just amazing, will be able to do it for us. We are extremely new, so a lot of, and small, so a lot of rescues will have, they'll provide the food for their fosters. Because we are so small, our fosters are so great and they provide the food for us. So anytime any of the smaller kind of pet shops, they always donate food to rescue. So every once in a while we get a bag of dog food donated to us. So we'll, you know, split it up between our house or whoever needs some dog food. And then the other thing that we do is, as far as adopting dogs, we have a pretty in-depth process as well. Any special adopters has to meet the dog first. Then we have them fill out an adoption form. We do a home visit to make sure, you know, it's going to be a great place for the dog. There's a yard, there's a fence, you know, who else is around. If there's any other animals, dogs, or kids in the house, we do a meet to make sure everyone gets along. Then we do a trial period that lasts for 30 days to see that it's going to be a good fit for both the dog and for the family. And then we just check in. All of our dogs are spayed, neutered, and up to date on all of their shots before they're adopted out. You know, if they have to go in for like a weekly checkup or whatever, then they're fine to go to their new owners. But we don't let any of our dogs go until they've been fully vetted and up to date and up to date on everything. Just being responsible owners is what we do before we give them to their forever families.
I think of this, it's interesting, you know, when you and I spoke pre-interview and you talked about what you were doing, I immediately looked at it entirely from the perspective, from the human perspective. I thought, this isn't this great? You know, we're helping our wounded warriors. You and I talked about how, you know, having a dog, being in that relationship helps our wounded veterans with companionship, with structure, with all those different things in terms of how it helps the person. But, you know, share with our listeners a little bit, in your opinion, you know, how does it work for the animal?
Well, we've, you know, knock on wood, really have been able to have some really great animals. And I'm a very, very firm believer that, you know, every dog deserves a second chance. I think almost every person deserves a second chance. And this is these dogs' opportunities. You know, these dogs are coming from living under a trailer, being chained to a tree, or you know, living outside in a, you know, 10 by 10 run with 10 other dogs. And these dogs love people. You know, they've never, you know, at first they may be timid. We have one dog that, you know, when we went to go pick her up from the trailer park, she hid underneath the trailer and barked for an hour and wouldn't come out. And now she sleeps in bed next to me with her head on the pillow. And if I try to move her down to my feet, she is not happy. So that just goes to show, with, you know, I think it even took us 4 days that she made it from being an outdoor dog her whole life to coming inside and being fed on a regular basis. You know, they now let me know when it is time to eat. When we first started feeding them, they were nervous at first. They weren't even sure if they were allowed to eat. And now it's 8:02 and where is my food? And I want my food now, Mom. It's kind of what we go through now every morning and every night. You know, this is the first time they've ever been shown some really great love and compassion. And in return, you know, they are so dedicated and so loyal. You come home from work and they are so happy to see you. You know, they have no problem getting way too many kisses and wrestling around and playing chase with you. And it's just a huge difference to them because they're finally in a safe place. And most of these dogs have never been safe. And you can see it, and I mean, it's such a cliche, but you honestly can see it in their eyes. You know, we picked up one puppy that, you know, she was just scared. If you went to go touch her, she would flinch. And now you look at her, and she just, no, nothing. She's not scared of anything. She'll jump right in your lap. She loves being around people. You know, she just needed that opportunity to be nurtured and loved and learn that, you know, not all bad, and she has just been great. And that happens with a lot of our dogs. So it's, and not only helps the dogs, but it helps the people. Like, you are giving back to helping a dog find its new life and become what it should be, become a great dog and a loved dog and a family member is what, you know, essentially is what you're doing. And in return, that family member is just the best and so great. So
you use the phrase love and compassion share with our listeners a little bit the effect it has on you. Obviously, you have to do that. You do this because you want to do this. You know, you have a sensibility to help the veteran and to help the animal. At some level, though, is it exhausting or is it always an emotional high? Talk to me about the effect it has on you in terms of doing this.
Well, it can definitely be all of those things. It's definitely overwhelming. You know, I'm 24 years old, so I'm, you know, forging forward with trying to make a career and, you know, doing things with my life. So it can be overwhelming going to work and then coming home and, you know, having dogs to feed and things to do and working on this rescue. And I've just been contacted about this person who wants this. This fell through. But it's also so rewarding, you know, being able to bring these dogs from these terrible situations and seeing them, you know, sleep at night and not whimper. You know, it's normal at first to see a couple of the dogs when they come home, they have nightmares and they whimper in their sleep. And, you know, you always see a dog running in its sleep or whatever. And knowing that for the first time, my other puppy just started running instead of whining in her sleep for the first time, and knew she's having good dreams, and that makes it all worth it. You know, being able to know that you're going to bed and you've saved at least 5 dogs from living outside, from freezing, from being used as a bait dog, for any of those things. At the end of the day, even when it's been a frustrating day, even when it's been an extremely hard day, at the end of the day, you know you've at least impacted in some way to these dogs. And the other thing, too, is that I never knew what I was getting myself into as far as community support. There are a huge amount of rescuers and dog lovers, and all of us go through the same emotions. You know, the other night I was talking to a head of this huge pit bull rescue out of Charlotte, North Carolina, and she was like, I need to drink. It was a rough day, and I was like, oh, I have the same day. You know, a foster fell through, or this person said they would donate this amount of money, or we're $1,000 into vet bills, and we don't have enough donations, and I need a crate, or I just had to turn someone down with a dog because I have nowhere for it to go, you know? And you have these days where you just feel like this is so much, but knowing you have someone to talk to that is going through the same thing and will always remind you, you can't save everyone, but you are saving and making an impact on some. And by keeping your head above water, by talking, by being optimistic, by just breathing. I mean, I can't even tell you how important breathing is. It's so stupid. Just taking a deep breath and being like, okay, you know, it's 10:30 at night. I've just now seen way too many dogs. I need to close my computer and just breathe and enjoy the ones I have here and on their futures. And it just, it comes full circle. And especially bringing the veteran aspect into it, that makes it that much more rewarding. I feel like sometimes I should be doing more. So it's nice to know that, you know, I had a veteran just contact me saying that he has PTSD and he would like to be able to come and walk the dog once a week just to have some friendly, you know, interaction because he can't have a dog where he is. That's exactly what we want. He said he just wanted someone to hang out with so he's not lonely, and that's what we want. So knowing that I can help a dog and a person just makes all the stress and crazy and chaotic everything worth it. So it's a crazy journey, and it's definitely not something I envision myself doing right away, especially at 24, but I mean, I definitely would not trade it for anything, and I'm just really actually excited for us just to keep growing and keep doing more and being more established so we can be able to save more dogs than what we're doing and having more fosters. So, you know, it's a lot, but it's great. I have to say I love what I'm doing. And I don't get paid, so that's what you should be able to say that.
Well, Liz, it is a terrific thing you're doing. Before we bid you farewell, I want you to tell all our listeners how they can help out and get involved and get in touch with you and all that kind of stuff. And also let all our listeners know, you know, once you hear this and you do feel like you want to help out and get involved in some way, you can always email us at theatlanticvoice@gmail.com. But Liz, go ahead and tell everyone how they can find out more about Bushland the Peck and how they can help out.
So we do have a couple of different avenues. The first is email. My email will be posted on Zeph's blog post for you to see, but it is ebgrandchance@gmail.com. We have found an amazing person that is willing to create the website for us pro bono because she wants to help a nonprofit, which is so nice to hear because people are trying to charge me $500. So we will hopefully have our website up and running by next week. The other way to see our adoptable dogs in the meantime is we are on Facebook. We're Bushel and a Peck Dog Rescue, and you'll see a picture of a black pit bull. That's our personal rescue. He was a big dog, and we saved him in California.
Well, Liz, thanks for being on the AV15. It's a terrific thing that's going on down there. And folks, again, if you want to get involved, Facebook them at Bushel and a Peck Rescue. And you can also email them either down there or here at theatlanticvoice@gmail.com. Liz, thanks for being on. You have been listening to the AV15, a production of the Atlantic Voice podcast. If you'd like to be on the AV15, email us at atlanticvoice@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. And remember, all AV15s and all episodes of the Atlantic Voice podcast can be found on iTunes. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.